हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 87. According to the Lord's statement, by knowledge arising from bhakti, one realizes Brahman or Tat and then merges in Brahman. Another verse also says that the person desiring realization of Brahman should perform pure bhakti. Everything that can be achieved by fruitive activities, penance, knowledge, detachment, mystic yoga, charity, religious duties, and all other means of perfecting life is easily achieved by my devotee through loving service unto me. If somehow or other my devotee desires promotion to heaven, liberation, or residence in my abode, he easily achieves such benediction. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:20-32:33.
There are two directions that usually are described. One is this, when the devotee desires all that stuff, he gets it. And another one is if he desires anything that it's not favorable, then the Lord doesn't give, or gives, that then he does not desire this one anymore.
What's the difference?
He gives?
No, see, if we're looking for he gives and we maintain the desire, then that doesn't seem to be an option.
Okay. So that's the option.
You know. The point being is that we can see from before is that any path actually works because of bhakti. Without bhakti, they don't work. And so that's the whole point. So the person wants to merge in Brahman, he does that by performance of bhakti. So the point being is that you want fruit of activities, you'll get that by bhakti. You want liberation, you'll get that by bhakti. You want to, enter into his abode, you'll get that by bhakti. So the point is we will take it, oh great, so bhakti is a good facility for getting what we want. But then the point would come as like Sanatana Goswami and that person who came to him and the Chintamani stone, right? Is that if that's so easy because of bhakti, then what bhakti itself can give, right? So that's prema. So that's the most important. Since you're putting in the same effort anyway, right? So bhakti will make it easier and give the result easier. So the point is if that's there, then what is it that bhakti does? Right? So that's the intelligent person. He moves forward. That's why it says everything that can be achieved by fruit of activities, penance, knowledge, detachment, mystic yoga, charity, religious duties, and all other means of perfecting life is easily achieved by my devotee through loving service unto me. So I just was reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur talking. What I mean, Prahlad Maharaj mentioned 12 forms of religion, right, that are meant for elevation. I just read yesterday Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about 18. So whether that's a further 6 or it's a break up, down of those 12 into further parts. You know what I'm saying? So you have like this, all these different ones are given. But means the fruit of activity means you get a result, right? But it's fruitive because you want that result. But that result itself comes by bhakti because you're performing a service, an activity. Activity always gives result. So you get that result. Penance means whatever you've done in the way of the difficulty that comes from that, that benefit that you would get from that, you already get because performing devotional service, because it means that there's an effort and there's a difficulty that comes up. So that result will come anyway when you're performing the service. Right? Knowledge means you know about the Lord, you know about the living entity, you know about everything like that. So that whatever you would get from the material knowledge, you already gained in the spiritual knowledge. The spiritual already includes the material. Material doesn't include the spiritual. Right? Detachment, because it's being done for the Supreme, then you're not doing it for yourself. So there'll be the detachment. For the materialist, then the detachment is there's a temporary feature to get what he wants. But the devotee, because he's already detached, it's for Krishna, whatever result would come from detachment, he's getting anyway. You understand? Because the point is how you say, you put potatoes into the pan, you cook them, at the end you'll have cooked potatoes. Whether you're doing that in a grossly materialistic way or whether you're doing it from the platform of pure devotion. The mechanics are the same. Right? The laws of nature are the same. They always function in the same way. So if you're detached, you'll always get that result of that detachment. But if you're doing the detachment just to get that result, that's all you get. The other is you're doing it to please Krishna. You get that bhakti, and this result comes as a side thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mystic yoga means that whole point is to bring you to the point of being able to meditate on the Lord. You get that anyway, because that's what you're doing, hearing, chanting, and remembering. Because the whole purpose of the mystic yoga system is that. Right? Then charity, that everything is being given away, so whatever you have, you're giving it away. So you're giving it to the Lord, you're going to get the best benefit. So it's not that benefit changes. Religious duties, you're doing whatever it is, how you fit in. And that's being done to please the Lord. So the result of that religious duty is gained. Because from that you gain those things that you use in the service, right? The whole idea is that you perform these duties, it gets you result. What are the results for using in the Lord's service? So since you're doing service to the Lord, you're getting the facilities to do that service. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's what it means, that there's all whatever it is that you're engaged in, that comes automatically with devotional service. Because devotional service, you're performing the pious things, right? Vikarma, you may start there. You may start by offerings that are not exactly recommended because you're living a sinful lifestyle. But as soon as you start to advance and purify, there's no interest in that sinful lifestyle. So if there's still an interest, that means there's an impurity there. Right? Not that it's, oh, it's natural and it's our right and this and that. No, it just means there's an impurity there. Of course, we don't want to say like that. We always try to cover things up. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, what is it? The person doesn't take a bath, they stink, but they put on deodorant. Like that. You know, and it's considered very sophisticated. In fact, the name given, it's called a French bath. Right? You know, you just wash your face, put on some deodorant. Arriba. Yeah. So that's the thing. They try to cover up what's not good by making it just look sophisticated. That's all. So that's the difficulty. Is that the one by nature? One would be interested in pure pious activities, but we're not interested in varnashram. That's the point. As soon as one takes up seriously devotional service, that interest in varnashram, you know, also wanes, because varnashram, we're performing it because of the benefit we'll get from the results of the prescribed duty. So the devotee doesn't perform those activities for the results of the prescribed duty. He performs it because that's what he's supposed to do, and he gets those results. Does that make sense? So, but it's not that he doesn't follow varnashram. It's just that he's not following varnashram for the benefits that you'll get from varnashram. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. That's why it's hard to understand, because we'll think, oh, well, we do all those things because of the benefits. We're not getting the benefits. We won't do that. But that's the impersonal path. Right? Because we always think is that spiritual must be the opposite of material. So, but we choose the wrong things. Right? Instead of material world's temporary, therefore spiritual is eternal. Here it's full of misery, there it's full of bliss. You know, here it's there's ignorance, there it's knowledge. We choose the wrong things. We don't choose this. Is that due to ignorance, so we always get it backwards. Is that work? Yeah. So it means you're doing the devotional activity, therefore you can get prema from that. But if you have any material desire, that can also be gained. You know, because there's no other better way to gain it. But why would you gain that when you could get prema? Because if you're getting those, you're not getting prema. Right? And so since we can get prema and they'll come anyway, then why worry about it? But it's where the focus is. If it's like, oh, I can do this and get this, that means it's on the and. But if I'm just performing Krishna's service, those things come anyway. But also it is said, the Lord certainly gives desired objects to devotees who request them, but he does not give in such a way that the devotee will ask again after finishing his enjoyment. He gives his lotus feet, which include all desirables, to those worshippers who do not desire them. So when we give up the desire for these desirables, then we get the Lord, who's the most desirable and who's the source of all desirables. In fact, it's him that you're experiencing in attaining desire. So it's just a matter of switching that consciousness. That's why it's one of the main points that's being made in on the principle of Bhava Bhakti is there's no material desire. One doesn't see anything separate from the Lord. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This particular verse, it is discussing about jnana mishra bhakti, bhakti mishra jnana, and then bhakti. So then when we speak about
just
bhakti,
as a side point. No, just as a side point. You don't come from a village, right? You come from the city?
Yeah.
Okay, go on. Because so if you came from a village, you'd talk much louder.
when you speak of bhakti, you know, the byproducts are jnana and vairagya.
Yes.
Like when we have bhakti mishra jnana, jnana mishra bhakti, and you know, bhakti. So in that particular case, the jnana part that we have, you know, in these three categories, is it going to differ based on the Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan realization?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, but you can't, it can be mixed. Because the point is, it's a matter of whether it's pure knowledge or not. See, because pure knowledge means actual parampara knowledge of, you know, the Lord, the living entity, the material world, the process, and the result. So when you know the Lord, then part of that is Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, the Lord of all energies, the Lord of Rasa. You know all these different things. You know the living entity. You know his position as servant of the Lord. Right, the material energy you know as the energy of Krishna acting under his direction. You don't see it as illusion, or the jiva as illusion, like that, or the Lord as not having a proper form. So it's also a matter of whether it's real knowledge or not. Like the Mayavadis, they are absorbed in Brahman, but they actually don't know what Brahman is, because they're saying, what's it? Nirguna Brahman. But there is no such thing as Nirguna Brahman, because even just saying Nirguna Brahman, that's one guna of Brahman.
Yes.
At least. So there's no such thing. Right? So their actual understanding of the Lord is actually material. It's not spiritual. We call them transcendentalists because they're trying to know what's beyond. But as far as actually knowing, what do they know? You understand?
Yes.
Like that. And if they know that the Supreme Lord is there, but they see him as the one who's going to fulfill all of your desires, and that's the only importance of the Lord. So if that's the only importance, do we actually understand the Lord? Do we actually understand who we are and what the material energy is? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the whole point, is we're not understanding. So they're material concepts. Even though they may be talking about Vishnu, they may be talking about Brahman or Paramatma or even the Supreme Person. But they're recognizing only part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, except for that which is proper sampradayic knowledge, in the Vaishnava lines, no one is dealing with pure knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I was thinking to the previous point is that the story of Gop Kumar is the best example because he's getting top position on every level materially.
Yeah.
Then he continues his sadhana and then he,
keeps going.
And then he gets to the real thing.
Yes, yes. That's because he has that proper knowledge and he's had that proper exposure from his guru. Where he has the proper name, he has that proper experience of that relationship with the guru and that, though he doesn't understand it.
Yeah.
You know? But that's the whole potency, it'll still take you forward. That's why the name does not have... That's why in the scriptures the glories of the name are considered the greatest of any performance of sacrifice. Because... any other form of sacrifice, it requires knowledge. It requires proper attitude. You're giving in charity, you don't do it right. It's in passion or ignorance. Right? So, but the holy name isn't restricted by those rules. So no matter what you do, if it's somehow or another connected, there's some benefit. That's the glory. So even though he doesn't have that great knowledge in that because he's a simple cowherd boy, then he still is advancing by that mercy of the name. And from being a simple cowherd boy, he's ending up as, Indra, Brahma, and everybody. Like you said, he has all the best positions. So it's, it's how you say. Yeah. So that aspect... that's why the name is given as the main aspect. So if that's there, then all these other things are already included. Because the purpose of them is to connect you to the Lord in the consciousness that I'm His servant. All these other things are to do that. Right? Your fruit of activity means an activity that gets a result. What's that result for? It's supposed to be for Krishna. Your penance means whatever difficulty one will go through to gain that result. Like that. You're willing to take that. So that's penance. Penance is not that... It means you get benefit from penance even if you don't like it. Like let's say the homeless person living in the street, that's penance. He doesn't desire that. He doesn't want that. But because he's doing it, he will get benefit. But if he's willing to accept that for a higher purpose, then you get way more benefit. Right? So then you call it penance. Right? Otherwise for the other person, you just call it unfortunate. Right? So he's a natural recipient of welfare activity. Because they consider themselves in a poor condition. But let's say someone's a renunciate, keeps nothing. They're not a recipient of welfare activity. Right? There it's a matter of how you say, spiritual activity to respect and try to help in some way. Moving out of the way because you're blocking Diogenes' son. Like that kind of a thing. Knowledge and knowledge about the Lord, if you know, that already includes the material, because material world energy is part of his knowledge, of knowing him. So it's already the original position, is that having that, then that's what it's about. It's about knowing that pure knowledge. So it's not that we're interested in knowledge, we're interested that it is in connection with him. So we know him, we know better how to act. Until the point comes where there's just that natural spontaneous attraction. But if not, then we know by intelligence better to be attracted to him and serve him than be attracted and serve the material energy. So all these different things, the detachment, it's not about I'm so detached in that, it's about it's for Krishna. So automatically detachment's there. like that. We're connected to the Supreme. Now there's no one more mystic than him. So then that's mystic yoga. Does that make sense? So everything we have is given to him. So that's your charity. You know, everything you do is by nature connected with your nature in serving him. So that's the perfection of religious duties. Does that make sense? So if in doing their devotional service, you're doing it just to please him, the material is already accomplished with it, because its original source is the spiritual, right? Just like Mother Yashoda, she's cooking for Krishna because of her affection for Krishna on that platform of pure unalloyed Braja Bhav, right? Now, but it has the specific of parental rasa. And so, and of that, then she's the mother. And so then, naturally, then to express that, she cooks for Krishna. But it's not about cooking, it's about serving Krishna in parental rasa. Cooking is a natural form. Right? So, since she's trying to do that to please Krishna, express her motherly attachment, therefore, she knows the most about it and create the greatest variety in everything for Krishna. You know, according to the situation, according to time of the day, according to the particular season, all these things, she knows this the best. Right? Now, that knowledge without bhakti was just that, oh, this level of sophisticated cooking gives the best taste. And that's your interest in the cooking. You know, like a chef or something. Well, then that's material. But where does it come from? It comes from the spiritual world. So it's not something separate. All we do is, when we remove Mother Yashoda's love and just add in the sensual aspect, then we get the mundane. You understand? So that's what's happening. All the activities of devotional service that the Brajavasis perform, those are all the basis of what we would call the Vedic activities of, you know, means of perfecting life. All the kinds of sacrifice to perfect one's life. Because what's the perfection of life? Prema. And so these are the activities of person in prema. But it's not about the rules of prema or the benefits of prema. It's about being used as a medium. So whichever medium is best, that's what you use. Does that make sense? So that's what you're doing. You're using that for Krishna. So that's why then sometimes it appears it's not about the rules. That's where it will say it's not about the rules. The rules may be dropped. But it's not that they're dropping them and then doing vikarma or whatever they like. They're following another form of perfect activity. Does that make sense? So that's what they're doing. In other words, the gopis, they're at home doing all their duties. Why? Because then people will just take them as a nicely situated lady within the Braj community. So no one will be looking at them. Right? If you're just doing all your regular day-to-day ordinary duties, does anybody notice you? No. If you're doing something that's out of the ordinary, you know what I'm saying, wrong place, wrong time, wrong people, then everybody starts talking and noticing. Right? And then when they notice, then there's restrictions. Right? So therefore, for them to be free to be with Krishna, it's their service to maintain that freedom to be with Krishna by doing their household duties. But, so now that's they're doing it, but only because it's Krishna, not because that's their attachment to those duties or anything. But now, when there's the opportunity in the evening or in the day to meet Krishna, then those household duties aren't practiced. Other duties are practiced to serve Krishna. Right? Other means of sacrifice. You know, so that's what it means. Not that we look at it, we have to be careful to not look at it from the the karmic point of view is that, oh, we don't have to follow the rules, then what does that mean? I replace that with my own desires. No, you don't have to follow that rule means I replace it with that rule of trying to please Krishna, I replace it with another activity that pleases Krishna. So our own mental speculation, our own fruit of desire is left out of the equation. So we always have to be careful to not interpret according to our own desire. Is that? Yeah. So Gopal Kumar, because he's then chanting the holy name, absorbed, has that faith in Guru, has that faith in the name, then he gets everything, whatever there is possible to gain. He's, like you said, as an example, perfect example, that you don't find, one case where one person gained everything. You know what I mean? There's nothing more to gain within that, on any realm like that. So that's the perfection. But you see, the best perfection is then when Krishna wakes up. Right? No? Yeah, so that's the whole point. You know, of course, there's a little bit of austerity or penance before that, that the Brajabasis are berating you, that, you know, you killed Krishna or something like that. But as soon as Krishna wakes up, then everybody understands the position. Right? So you don't get better than that. You know, whatever one gained in Vaikuntha, whatever one gained in Mahakalapura, whatever one gained as Brahma or Indra or as a great king, none of these things are comparable. So that's why that's the best of. Is that?
These activities of fruitive activities, penances, charity, and everything. So when we say about Sarvadharma Parityajya, it simply means that these activities are to be devoted to Krishna and not being performed independently.
Yes, they're dovetailed, but you would use the term dovetailed. Dovetailed meaning that you would be performing those, or those would be the natural forms according to your conditioning. So you're either doing it because that's what you can do, or it's because you have a desire to gain from that. So you're dovetailing, you're connecting it to Krishna. So then it would be karma yoga, jnana yoga. Right? What we're talking about on this higher level, that's yukta vairagya, is that you're connecting everything to Krishna, so whatever is within your capacity, according to the recommendations of Scripture, that's what you're going to connect to Krishna. So it's, I'm doing this because of the recommendations of Scripture, because I'm going to serve Krishna, rather than I don't know Krishna, I have to do something, so it's progressive to follow the Scriptures and do those duties that are connected with my physical, psychological nature. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So externally it looks exactly the same, but there's a difference. So we'll also call that connection to Krishna, that dovetailing, we can also call it yukta vairagya.
Yeah.
But it's just that the yukta and the vairagya aren't necessarily as developed; they're not as mature,
mm-hmm.
right? So they attain. You could say it's natural state in bhava, but it's actually a perfectional state in prema.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's about Krishna, it's not about us.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it's very mistake one for another is when, for example, concentration on penance, knowledge, and detachment is more prominent and is taken higher than, for example, doing religious duties for Krishna. And that way people are, somehow seems like escapism. They misplace, they may say that our own desire is what Krishna desires, and thus they kind of neglect.
Yes, but our own desire is what Krishna desires. But what is the natural real desire of the living entity? Yeah, so then that's what Krishna desires, is that we naturally take up that service to Krishna, because then he can reciprocate that. So in other words, Krishna wants to interact with the living entity based on the platform of devotion, So then, until that comes to that stage. But if we use it for other than that, then the point is why do we have to fulfill our desire? Why is it we have to work for it? Couldn't Krishna take care of that?
Yeah.
You know? But the point is that this isn't the place for it. This isn't the method for it. Because we're making the mistake that this is the place of becoming happy. Right? That's the thing. Therefore, it's not going to work. So, only if you use this place in connection with Krishna, then actually you're dealing basically on the spiritual platform. Then you get the benefit of dealing in that way. Because then, for the pure devotees, technically there is no material world. It's not that the existence of it isn't here and its temporariness and all that, but they see it simply as Krishna's energy. So it's not, it's Brahman, it's spiritual. Right? The transformations of it are temporary, but the potency itself and the potency that creates our interest and need for it, that's all spiritual. You understand? Because it's all coming from Krishna.
Sometimes devotees, they openly preach that yes, you're concentrated fully on devotional service, on Krishna's desire, but Krishna will see that you don't need these, for example, for the grihasthas. They say, Krishna will think that you don't need these facilities, so he will not give them. So you should imagine, you should pray specifically.
We mean, so we're saying Krishna is so dull, sitting in your heart, that he's so distracted by, you know, making all the corpuscles work and this and that, and working out the, what do you call it, that acid that builds up in the muscles, like that, and trying to get that out, and moving the lymph, and like that, that he gets so distracted he doesn't notice the desire that you're thinking about 24/7. So why it is like that? So the point is so why would we have to pray for it? Because otherwise Krishna won't know. He's in your heart. That's the point. He knows. We don't even know what we want. Otherwise, if people knew what they want, would we have to bring up the discussion of logic? People would naturally, as a normal state of existence, say exactly what they want to say in one sentence. Yeah, but the more there's more desire, that's the 5-minute question. You understand? So the devotees don't even know what they want. Because you say, okay, you want that. Okay, now you have it. Now what? Now are you happy? No.
Next.
Yeah, then yeah. It's the next. You know? Okay, we got this apartment, then we got the next apartment, then we get the whole building. We want the next building. We want the building on the other side also. And the ones in front,
For the whole town.
Yeah, and then we can knock it all down and just make a big park with just our house in the middle. Yeah, and then everybody else would be around the edges, but we can't see them because they're behind the park trees. And as we need without us asking, they're just regularly coming and delivering goods and everything and like that. It's getting there, right?
And they come to visit.
They come to visit when you want, who you want, not the wrong people at the wrong time.
We can visit them.
Yeah. Is that make sense? So Krishna knows, but the point is he's the, because it's not about what you want. That's comes from the platform illusion. It's coming from what you want, coming from the platform of pure knowledge. So in other words, as long as you're working with impure knowledge, yes, then those desires will be fulfilled. But the point is you'll only progress as long as you're engaging those inferior desires in Krishna's service. But if you're not connecting them to Krishna's service, then how one will be purified? Because you're only purified through sacrifice. So these are all the different varieties of sacrifice. Right? Because in all of these, then you have to do something for someone else. Right? Sacrifice is voluntarily doing something for someone else, giving up for some. So all of these, you have to do that. Fruit of activities, you have to perform all the different rituals and stuff like that. There has to be something for someone else. You're serving the Lord, the demigods, the different things like that. Penance, you have to do the same thing, because you have to follow the rules that are for someone else for it to be a penance. Right? The knowledge, then you have to put in that effort, you know, serve the teacher, do all the, you know, same. So each one of these, there has to be sacrifice. You know, does that make sense? So this idea that we want something, is it sacrifice? You know, because this thing is we're willing to go through penance and austerities and all that, but is it for pleasing the Lord or just for ourselves? You know, like that. You know, it's just like in fashion. It's cold outside. It's not freezing cold, but it's cold. Cold wind and all that. But you'll find many people, they don't dress for the weather because it won't look as good. You know, they'll have to wear something bulky or this or that, and they don't want to wear something bulky. So since they're only going to be out for a couple of minutes, then they don't bother. You understand? So that's austerity. But for what? For their social prestige. So that's the mode of ignorance, mode of passion. Yes?
So it seems that we have two extremes. On one side, people deny their own desires and then they become robots. Or on the other side, we have really pleasant, relaxed Vaishnavas, but in terms of their sadhana, it isn't there. So, you know, how can we balance those two?
So you're saying we should have robot Vaishnavas or really, really relaxed...
Yeah, we already have.
Yeah. He's not here.
Yeah. It's a matter of understanding what it's for, but if you're performing the proper duties, have the right minute, one will generate the other anyway. You follow the rules and regulations, even if it is in a more of a... problem in the bird community.
A domestic dispute.
Yes. That was my caterpillar. Because if you follow the rules and regulations, if it's to please Krishna, though, you are focusing more on the rules and the perfection of the rules, it may become a bit dry because you think it's the rule itself. But because you're performing it to please Krishna, with time, the heart will soften. Right? But without material attachment, that means one will be performing whatever duties are natural. What there may be more fixed in the duties due to habit, or there may not be so much. Then you see the other side. If one has that proper attitude to Krishna and maintains that, then gradually whatever is necessary and important for devotional advancement, that will be included. So eventually it'll all balance out. Does that make sense? Yeah. But it has to be, it's the connection to Krishna is what makes it work. So does that make sense? So in one sense you can say they may be involved in Niyamagraha. But if their desire is to please the Lord, then gradually it'll move that way. So that balance is always there because Krishna is the origin or source of all contradictory qualities. Right? He's the greatest, but he's, you know, comes in just that perfect size for interaction with the devotees. Right? You know, he's the supreme controller, but he's running away from Mother Jashoda with her stick. You know, all these things are there. So this idea of these balancing these contradictions, that's just the natural position for the devotee. Right? And then those who are servants of Krishna, then that becomes the easiest. They have the widest range of that. Like we see in Vaikuntha, you have various levels. So only the third level can really accommodate that concept. The others, it's. I mean, the second, it's okay. The first, it just doesn't make sense, right? So it's. He's God. Everything works in that way. So they don't even consider these aspects. Is that? Yeah. Okay. A little more loud.
There must be like a good understanding of what is Krishna's Icha, because sometimes we emphasize that his Icha is all absolute and we're just puppets in his hands and he's free and controlling everything.
Yes, that's there, but where are we puppets? From that aspect of he's just the Lord and we're puppets. Paramatma, okay. But I'm saying, what's the situation in which we're puppets and he's just the Supreme and that's all?
No.
But where would you see that mood? Krishna, do you ever see an example where Krishna is just the Supreme and servants are there and he's neglectful of the servants? No. So therefore, that means when we're servants, yes, but servants are the modes of nature, then he's the Supreme and we're just puppets in the hands of the modes of nature. Does that make sense?
When we're servants, we're willingly puppets.
Yes, and so therefore we're taking part in the pastimes, because the point is his desire is there, but that's being fulfilled by his internal potency, which we are assisting. So then we're instruments, not puppets. We use puppets when we're talking about modes. And we're using instruments, because puppets aren't, it's not voluntary. Instrument, it's voluntary. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. It's just a matter of which side you want to take. You're taking the greatness of the Lord, the all, that's nice, but then in devotion, it's beyond that. So you have to be very, very careful.
No problem with praying, make me dance.
Yeah, but that's a different ass. Let us dance according to how you like. That means he's an instrument. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's just a matter of which angle. It's the mood that you're taking, not the form. We're taking that it's the dancing is the point. No, it's the mood. Okay. Thus, for those who practice bhakti after attaining realization of Brahman, they may attain realization of Bhagavan. That is explained in this verse. Right? So, that by worshipping the Lord, then one will understand Brahman and one will go on to understand the realization of Bhagavan. So either the karma yogi, then through that, he'll come to that platform, from there he'll move on, like we see the four Kumaras or Sukadeva Goswami. So those examples are from that side. The other side is that the devotee, by worshipping the Lord through bhakti, then he comes to the Brahman platform of Brahma Bhuta. So Brahma Bhuta. Then they're on the Brahman platform, and then they have that realization of Bhagavan, so that had the completeness of it. Because the point is prema means there's the exclusive possessiveness of Krishna, that there's nothing else that is important. Right? What's important to you, you have a sense of possession. Right? So if Krishna is the most important, then the sense of possession is exclusively on Krishna. That will bring about prema. But if it's just that, you know, Krishna's there, he's nice, he's cool, then it's not going to give prema. So the actual realization of Bhagavan is realization of that person and his qualities and how wonderful he is. That will bring about this exclusive possession. Does that make sense? Yes.
So this possession is manifested in the three higher rasas, basically. Because dasya, that means I'm yours, but you're independent.
No, here in this case, possession means, I think, in the way of rasa. So ashray and vishay. Means that the ashray is the you're the ashray of exclusively that affection for Krishna. Does that make sense?
So it's coming from that side.
Yes, that we're talking here, that's an aspect of rasa. like that. Because on the tattva side, then we'll have these other aspects. So it's just that at some point we have to understand is that it all goes back to rasa. Means the tattva is there to explain it, so we're properly situated, so we're open to what it is. But rasa, you can't be explained. You can explain the forms and symptoms of it, but the experience can only be experienced. So that's why we deal with tattva until such time as that's experienced. Then there's no need to explain it. So what we're explaining is, let's say, the symptom that the different kinds of bhava, right? So the anubhava. So we're saying that there are tears in their eyes, but we're not explaining the experience that they're having. That you can't do. So again, we're talking about the secondary, but in relationship to the primary. So those on that platform of primary, then they'll appreciate that experience. But the discussion's always going to be secondary. So the science of bhakti, the science of devotion, the science of rasa, then it's going to have these scientific aspects to it, because you do have the jnana and kriya elements of bhakti. So you can explain them. But the actual experience, that hladini, that you can't explain. No one tries to explain it. That's why these kind of things, you explain it, and if someone appreciates it, nice, and if they don't, then you don't explain it. You don't deal with it. Does that make sense? Because certain things that can only be experienced. So hladini means the experience. But bhakti is a combination of samvit and hladini. So there is the form that it takes, the activity it takes. So then that itself then can be discussed. But the experience, that can only be experienced. Does that make sense? You know, it's like when pure bhakti destroys the contamination arising from gunas and karma, when one becomes free from material desires with the destruction of the three gunas, right? Because the three gunas control desire. So when we give up being controlled by the gunas, we give up material desire. By worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord with some desires, such as the case of Dhruva, one realizes in the pure heart the nature of Brahman, Atma, and the nature of Bhagavan, who is the source of Brahman. Right, so he had those desires, therefore he realized Brahman by his performance of devotional service. Then realizing the position of Brahman, then he can appreciate Bhagavan. Then he'll switch to that pure devotion. Does that make sense? Because otherwise before, one will get to that stage. Right? Because the result of knowledge is liberation. Right? But the result of bhakti is prema. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Similarly, when a cataract is removed from the eye, the pure eyes can see the sun. The word sakshat indicates that the form of the Lord, the basis of Brahman, is realized by the power of bhakti. Just as the sun deity is directly realized with his hands, feet, carrier, and associates by the devotee of the sun. Sardartha Darshani 11.3.40. Right? So does that make sense? So by that proper performance of bhakti, we will then come to understand the position of the Lord. From that, then we will be able to appreciate him as a person. Okay. So it's not just us that it goes on like that. Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. Sutra 1.3.43. Padyadi Shabde Vyaha. Pati, Lord, Adi, beginning with, there was one thing, was it the previous sutra?
Yeah,
it used the word for word from the previous one.
Oh, there wasn't that. Okay.
It didn't have its,
I'll make a note.
It didn't have its own.
Alright.
One of those, just in 42.
Oh, yeah.
42. Yeah.
Thank you.
42 was from 41.
Right.
Okay. Pati, Lord, Adi, beginning with Shabde Vyaha, because of the words. The jiva is not Brahman because words like master show difference between the Lord and the jiva, even in liberated state. Sutra Prakashika. In this sutra, the objector acknowledges that the Shruti does not speak of difference between jiva and Brahman, but that this difference is only temporary and superficial.
The Shruti does indeed.
In this sutra, the objector acknowledges that the Shruti does indeed speak of difference between jiva and Brahman, but that this difference is only temporary and superficial, owing to the jiva's identification with the material body. The sutrakar thoroughly refutes this contention. Right? So, first they'll say there's no difference. And then when it's proven that there is difference, then they'll say, yes, there's difference, but it's temporary. You know, it's like that. They're just not giving up. Like that. The sutrakar thoroughly refutes this contention, marshalling evidence for the eternal distinction between jiva and Brahman by referring to the same Upanishadic section of the preceding Vishayavakya, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4:3-4, as well as other Shruti statements. Shigovindabhasya, Purvapaksha. This argument does not prove that the jiva cannot become Brahman. It only shows difference between jiva and Brahman when the jiva is conditioned by upadis. Right, so they're trying to say the jiva becomes Brahman. So, okay, in this verse it is showing the difference. Then they're saying, okay, then we're accepting that this means it's showing the conditioned state of the jiva and the transcendental position of Brahman. But once you remove that upadi, then that jiva will become Brahman. Right? They're not accepting that that's an eternal position. Right? So, Siddhanta. The next sutra applies. Pat yadi shabde biha. The jiva is not Brahman because words like master show difference between the Lord and jiva even in liberated state. In later sections, the word pati, master, is used several times. This word is applicable only to Brahman, not the jiva. Right? Because jiva is never master. Because if we're taking condition, he's not master. Right? And if he's liberated, then he doesn't exist. So there can only be mastery if there is something to be master of. Right. In the later sa sava ayam atma sarvasya vasi sarvasya shanas sarvasyadipati sarvam idam prashasti yad idam kishcha. This Atma is the controller of all, the ruler of all, the master of all. He rules everything.
That's
Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 5:6:1. So that can't apply to the jiva.
Can it apply to Paramatma?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that was the point that this was all about, Paramatma. And therefore, yeah. Brahman in this case meant the greatest.
Okay.
Like that. He does not become greater by good actions, nor less by bad actions. He is the Lord of all, the master of all beings, the Lord of all people, the protector of all people, a dike, a separator, so that people will not be confused. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4:4:22. Right, so from different places, different Vishayavakyas that are being used, then if you put them together and look at it, because what they try to do is look at one isolated from the rest. And only if it will support what they're saying, then they'll bring in the others. Otherwise, they like to keep it isolated. Right? So that's so technically, in one sense, in there, dwait. Because sometimes they'll use this, sometimes that, it's whatever's at advantage. But ultimately, they're all, I say, what's the term used for that? Abheda, Advaita, right? Non-different. There's no, or it just means there's no distinctions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a difference. So when we're talking about all these problems with the impersonal, we're specifically talking about those who are exclusive monists, who don't see any difference, because that's an illusory concept, right? If you're seeing that everything's Brahman, but you can appreciate the variety within Brahman, but it's all Brahman, that just means you're at a lower level of, you know, actual God realization. Right? Does that make sense? That's why Sukadeva and Four Kumaras could move forward.
Mm-hmm.
because they didn't. There was nothing that was illusion. In fact, for them, everything is Brahman. So there is no illusion. Right? It's an illusion to think there's an illusion. So for them, then they could move forward, as it said, through performance of bhakti, then they could move from Brahman realization to realization of the Lord. Right? The four Kumaras, by offering desiring to see the Lord, offering obeisance to the Lord, smelling the tulsi leaves at the lotus feet of the Lord, through that bhakti, then they realize the personal position. Sukadev Goswami, by hearing about the Lord, right, at this point. And then the fun part is later, he's the one who speaks, right? He's known for speaking like that. Okay. So, he does great things. It doesn't make him greater. He's already the greatest. It's just within him. It's natural. He will do great things. He does things that appear to be bad activities. That doesn't make him any less great. Oh, how can he be God? This and that. So much bad things happening in the world. It doesn't reduce his position. These passages show that the Brahman is distinct even from the liberated Jiva, who is under the Lord in the liberated state. As well, one cannot call the liberated Jiva the master of all or ruler of all, since actions involved with the material world are forbidden for the liberated Jiva. Jagat vyapara varjam. The liberated Jiva is free from dealing with the world. Brahma Sutra 4.4.17. Right, so he doesn't have that position of dealing with the world, but here the Brahman is. So that means his position is always there, and the Jiva is not dealing with that, because the liberated Jiva won't be dealing with the material world. Right? Well, it means material energy is energy does, but as far as Jivas, only the conditioned are here dealing with the material world. Right? The liberated souls that come here don't deal with the material world, they preach. Does that make sense? That's their business. So they technically, even you're saying they're interacting, like Yudhishthir Maharaj or Rishabhdev or other great personalities, they're to them, they're not dealing with the material world. They're only dealing with the transcendental realm. Right? It's the temporary form of it. But it's all transcendental because it's connected with Krishna. Like that. So they never deal with it. Only conditioned souls deal with it. Brahman, however, fits this description. Antaf pravishta shastra janam. The Lord enters all and is the ruler of men. Taittiriya Aranyaka 3.1. One cannot argue that the difference between Jiva and Brahman is due to upadhi, since the Lord and the Jiva exist separately, even when the Jiva is free from upadhis. Right? Because with upadis, then it's obvious there's a difference, and the Lord is the Lord of everything. But when the Jiva is freed, he's not dealing with the material world. It didn't say that now he controls everything. Right. Although it is said, the conclusion will be further strengthened in the Brahma Sutra 2.3.41. Though it is said, I am Atma Brahma, this Atma is Brahman. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.5. There it is explained that the Jiva is called Brahman because he possesses a portion of Brahman's qualities. Brahmaiva san. The Jiva becomes Brahman. That would be. So then, would that be the topmost respectable position within the Japanese society? Brahmaiva san? Yes, okay. So when Sukadev Goswami walks in, oh, Brahmaiva song. Okay. So the Jiva becomes Brahman actually means that the Jiva becomes like Brahman because of manifesting the eight qualities. For it is said, paramam sam yam upaiti. The Jiva attains similarity, not identity, with Brahman. That's the point, is similarity. So the eight qualities that were mentioned before, that I have basically zero recollection of, but the eight qualities, because as they're needed, they'll come back up. So.
From hunger,
yeah.
From material desire,
bondage,
something, yeah.
Okay, so caught the ones that were all in the important ones. said in the reverse order. Right?
Regarding the upadis, like when the generic upadis that Krishna, so like Jivira Swarupa Krishna and Nitya Das, and then by performance of bhakti, you know, we change the upadis because we develop a rasa, and then we get a specific upadi again. So it's like,
no, but they're not. You don't call them secondly upadis, because upadi just generally means that it's tacked on and it doesn't belong there. It's a question of synonyms. You understand? So, you choose a synonym that matches the situation. It means the same thing. So you could argue, no, but this word, it means the same thing. But it has a different flavor. So therefore, upadi is used to mean that which is not actually the soul, the identity. Because in the spiritual world, the form that they have is the soul. The qualities they have are the soul. They're not upadis. But here, then they're added on. So taking it that upadi means a designation, in the spiritual world they have designations, so therefore those are upadis, that's not the point. And here, you have to understand that in logic, something may work one way, but it doesn't work the other. So therefore, that they have designations, yes, but those aren't upadis. Because designations that aren't natural, those are upadis. Designations that are natural, those aren't upadis. Because otherwise, the soul is Satchitananda. Is that an upadi?
No.
You understand?
Yeah.
So therefore, in use of the words, then you have to, what's the purpose of the word? In other words, the word is there as a means of communication to discuss something that's connected with the Lord. So we're trying to actually get to that point, that experience of it. It's not about the word itself, right? You know, not that the word on the transcendental platform doesn't have a non-difference, but the point is that it's not about the secondary aspects, it's about the primary. So if we focus too much on the secondary, then we start to get too mechanical. And that mechanistic approach then, you know, how you say, ends up with the robot. Right? And then you want to see it, is you're one of those funny square ones like that, or you're up-to-date iBot. Right? You know. But in any case, it's a problem. So?
That's why that verse, Sarvupadi Vinirmuktam, is so significant, because it directly refutes the Mayavad contention about upadis. Once they're gone, they claim you merge. But in this verse it says, once those upadis are gone, with purified senses, Rishikena, one worships Rishikesha, the Lord of the senses, in bhakti. Mm. And so that eternal relationship is established after the upadis are
removed,
destroyed.
Very good. See? So that's the point, is that the term here, if you want to say designation, because what's your purpose in that? That someone has a designation, what's that designation for? In the spiritual world, they have a designation. What is that for?
Serving Krishna.
Hmm? Serving Krishna. And what? And but how does it serve Krishna?
In the different rasas.
In the rasas. So that's the whole point. It's within rasas. Designation within rasa.
Mm-hmm.
And so rasa based on prema, that's natural for the living entity.
Mm-hmm.
That's the natural position. So upadis means the unnatural position.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So here, the verse. Okay? Yes. It was previously explained, 1.1.17, that becoming Brahman did not mean merging, since after, quote-unquote, becoming Brahman, it is mentioned that one then attains Brahman, and thus Brahman remains separate from the jiva. Because you can't become Brahman and attain Brahman. It's two different things. If you became Brahman, you're already Brahman, so nothing to obtain. So he became Brahman, that means he came to the transcendental consciousness. In other words, the jiva is always Brahman, but because of polluted consciousness, he doesn't act as Brahman. So when the consciousness becomes purified, then it becomes Brahman. And having come to the Brahman platform, then he can attain Brahman, which means this, that realization of the person. So that's what we're saying. You come by performance of the sadhana bhakti, one can, by perfection of that proper knowledge, that knowledge burns up the material concept. That brings you to the liberated platform of Brahma Bhuta. From that platform, now you can realize the personal feature of the Lord in fullness, which means coming to the platform of prema. Right? So it's a natural thing. We're saying the same thing. You see, from neophyte you come to madhyama, madhyama to uttama, uttama to prema. Right? So that's what we're trying to do. Thus it is proved that in conditioned and liberated state, the jiva remains separate from Brahman. The liberated jiva is not the producer of names and forms. Only Paramatma is described in the text, right? Because he doesn't create them. They'll say, oh no, but he gives names to them. But they already have their position. They already have like that. Even the concept that something, a thing gets a name, that's still coming from Paramatma. That's not coming from us. Right? As well, in the Brahma Sutra 1.1.16-17, difference was also taught. To remove any remaining doubt, the present sutra again states the fact. Repetition is not a fault, since this time it states that difference from the Lord exists even in the liberated jiva. Mm-hmm. Right? So before it was showing that he's different, he's not the supreme. Now it's showing even liberated, he's still different. Right? So different aspects of difference. Right? Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. The liberated soul cannot be identical with the supreme Lord, who is the Pati, master of all living entities. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.3.29. Your Lordship, being the origin of the life of this material world, is the master and controller of the living entities, both moving and stationary. And you inspire their consciousness, pranena, mukhyena, pati, prajanam. You maintain the mind and the acting and knowledge-acquiring senses, and therefore you are the great controller of all the material elements and their qualities, and you are the controller of all desires. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, you are the controller, through the chief prana, sutratma. Sutratma, or mukhya prana, is a deity embodying all jivas in the subtle state of mahatattva, before ahankara becomes manifest. So this would be
This is avyakta.
Yeah, avyakta. Mm-hmm. So be the avyakta state, right? Because ahankara comes then in mahat. You are the master of the progeny, and the master of their chitta by being their consciousness, which arises from transformations of chitta. Right. So even our impure consciousness, still Krishna has to be that, because things can't transform without Krishna. It's his energy. So our transformation of our consciousness to become polluted or transformation to become purified, still the potency of transformation is Krishna. You are the master of the minds and senses controlled by the mind. Right? So therefore the moving and non-moving, they all have some variety of senses. Though I haven't heard a definitive explanation of the senses of a living entity who's a rock. But in any case, they do feel something, because one pundit, when we were asking about shaligrams and this and that, and defining them, they were saying the difficulty is that the rock that they're made from, I think basalt, then you also have rocks that are basalt that aren't shaligrams. Says, but you can tell it's because shilas are alive, so therefore, you know, if you poked them with a pin, they would move because it would hurt. So therefore, if it's not shaligram, you poke it with a pin, it doesn't move. Like that. So even in the form of a rock, then there is the sensual perception. So then those jivas that are rocks but are not shaligrams, right? So not by the Mayavad conception of that, now that you become rock, now you become shaligram. Then if you poke them, they'll feel it. But that seems to be about it. So Yeah, so I'm not sure if you poke them, they feel it. I'm not sure what they'll think of the baseball bat. Kids out in the back lot, right? Okay.
So pet rocks, there's some basis behind it.
Yeah, there's some basis behind it. You make sure you get a living rock, otherwise. Yeah. But in any case, if you worship a rock, whether it's living or not, you still become affected by ghosts. Mm. That's why it's very dangerous to worship a rock as a shaligram. Mm. Like that.
So we should check Mayavadis by poking them?
That's Mayavadis. That's one way to do it. You poke them.
If they move?
Yeah, then they're not self-realized yet. Yes. You are the master of the great elements and their sense objects and their impressions. So yeah, so then you are the So he's the master of everything. Everything that everything's made out of, everything's transfer, any transfer, every existence of anything, the transformation and the process of transformation, the results of that transformation, the experience gained from that transformation, that's all Krishna. There's nothing separate from Krishna. So by coming to this realization that you see that Krishna is everything, by that, then what's the next natural step? Is the person who is all that and who is therefore the importance of all that. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the next natural state. Because the tendency is we only see ourself as a person and everything else is technically impersonal until we come to the liberated state where we're not looking at our conditioning as the person, we're seeing the soul as the person. Then in that state we can see everybody else as people, and that who's the origin of all these people? That's the Lord. Does that make sense? So it's a natural position. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So in other words, you come to the liberated state to be on the platform of Bhava. And then from there, you'll realize the Lord and come to Prema. Does that make sense? So there's some understanding of that before that platform, otherwise why are you moving forward? Mm-hmm. So in other words, it's the devotion to the person that moves you forward. But it's when you come to the full realization that Brahman platform, that's when it becomes very, very quick. Does that make sense? Sorry? Yes. Okay. 7.3.31. Oh my Lord, your lordship is eternally awake, seeing everything that happens. As eternal time, you reduce the duration of life for all living entities through your different parts, such as moments, seconds, minutes, and hours. Nonetheless, you are unchanged, resting in one place as the Supersoul, witness and Supreme Lord, the birthless, all-pervading controller, who is the cause of life for all living entities. Right? So he is controlling time, he is time, but he is unaffected by time. You know, that's the all these contradictory things that makes him. Is that he is all the parts of time, but he is unaffected by all this, even though he is time. Time doesn't affect him, right? Because he's time. Mm-hmm. Right? So he's beyond. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Thus ends the second pada of the first adhyaya of Vedanta Sutra.
Sorry, it's third pada.
The third pada. Yeah. Even better. You moved ahead one already. Okay. So just that was fast, right? We thought that was, what, about 2 seconds? Hey, wait a minute. No, we've got UFK. No, even 1 second. 1 second we moved through a whole part.
So, do you want to start fourth today or tomorrow?
No, because time just finished. It just exactly happened. So, tomorrow we'll start. So that's, yeah, cool. Very good.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav.